Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagan Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagan Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagan Tonight.
Thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and a brother initiate and soon-to-be teacher of the Unnamed Path. And you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men on a general level. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show by calling in at area code 347-308-8222. You can also hang out in the chat room, or you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_theup, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Matthew is in California this weekend for Stone and Stang with the rest of the brothers. Wish him an amazing, amazing time at gathering, and I'm rather jealous that I'm not there. I'm rather sad, actually. But I'll get to Stern and Stang one of these years. Today, I am delighted to welcome one of our fellow brothers and teacher of the Unnamed Path, Chase Powers. He is going to be co-hosting today with me. I'm also going to be grilling him on with some questions and whatnot, because like I said, he is a teacher, so we are doing kind of a little introductory series on all the teachers of the path. Last show we had David Shorey, and very delighted to have Chase with us today. Chase Powers is a brother initiate and teacher of the Unnamed Path, a student of Anderson Ferry, and has been practicing and studying magic studying magic personally for nearly 20 years. He is also a graphic designer, working primarily within the pagan community, which is awesome. I don't think we have very many graphic designers in the community. I think we have a lot of people who want to start like pagan shops. But it's nice to have someone who is actually wanting to do graphic design. So, hi, Chase. Are you there?
I am. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I am fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
Now, Chase was actually my teacher in the Unnamed Path. He is the one who gave me my courses and did my initiation into the path. He was also one of the few brothers who lived in Texas. And just recently, didn't you just move recently? Where did you move to?
I did. I am currently living in Portland, Oregon. Beautiful, beautiful Portland, Oregon.
How are you adjusting to it? You know, being from Texas to moving all the way up north. I know it was a bit of a jump for me when I moved from Texas to Illinois.
It's been kind of an adjustment, honestly. between just the weather being vastly, vastly different than what I'm accustomed to. I'm not really used to it being 60 degrees in the middle of September and October. I love it. It's glorious. I'm even thoroughly enjoying the culture shock that I've been exposed to here.
I there was one thing that I still have little arguments with people with. A lot of people, like here in where I live, when they order a Coke, they'll say pop. And I don't know, that just bugs the heck out of me.
Yeah, no, it's Coke.
Yeah.
And usually the response from waitresses and waiters in Texas when you order a Coke is what kind? Or would you like Dr. Pepper or Sprite or Coke?
Exactly.
So, that is literally, I know that's a stereotype, but that is literally a thing that happens.
Have you gotten a chance to experience any of the nightlife or anything like that recently?
You know, I have actually, just a little bit, but I have one of our other brothers, Kurt, just married his partner, Dan, who is also a student in the NA path, working towards initiation. They just got married, but they did their bachelor party at a local leather bar.
Ooh.
Which was, I know, right? It was a toga party, and it was very, very fun. But they invited me out because Dan is very much the extrovert and likes mm-hmm. to encourage us introverts to get out of the house and do things. So I got to go to a leather bar. And had a blast, too. It's nice
awesome.
To get out of our comfort zones from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you went to another brother's wedding. How many brothers are there up in Portland?
Oh, goodness. Let me see here. I think there's something like 7 of us up here.
Wow.
Yeah, I think there's like 7 of us here now, with at least one on the way and several other people here who have expressed interest in starting to study the next time we start offering classes.
Sweet. That is so cool. That's so amazing.
Which for me will be after the new year.
Yeah. Chase is, I had said Chase was my teacher for when I went through my first round of classes. He was also my instructor for becoming a teacher in the MA path, which I'm still working through my stuff to get that finished and whatnot. So I had Chase twice. An amazing teacher. He's awesome.
Thanks.
So, when did you first start on your magical journey, Chase? These are going to be kind of the questions I'm going to ask a lot of the teachers when we get them. And I asked David some of these too. So, but when did you first start your magical journey? And what did you do? What did you practice before the NA path?
So I first started my magical journey in high school. I was 14, I think. Time flies when you get old. I was 14 in high school, and I'm not even sure exactly where I got started. I believe there was a girl that was in one of my classes who had Raymond Buckland's Big Blue Book of Witchcraft, whatever that's called, the Complete Encyclopedia of Witchcraft or whatever that's called.
Yeah, I just noticed Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Book.
Yeah, affectionately known by many people as Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Book. I got involved with a group of girls there in that high school who, to be perfectly honest, had seen The Craft one too many times. And while they were exploring their movie magic, Charmed Ones and The Craft kind of magic, I was like, okay, I'm going to go over here and study some actual stuff now. I have dabbled in a lot of different paths and traditions, sort of exploring where maybe I would want to go. I would say I started out more as an eclectic witch than anything else. And I more or less did that up until I found the Unnamed Path, actually.
What made you want to study the Unnamed Path? What drew you to it?
I'd been hungering actually for a long time. Through most of my magical studies, I had basically been paying only lip service to the spiritual sides of things. I was raised as a Southern Baptist in Texas, so I don't want to say subjected to a lot of, religious abuse, but just on this side of that. I had a lot of dissatisfaction with the way spirituality had been given to me before. So I more or less was like, oh yeah, I love the God, I love the goddess, now I'm going to go over here and practice magic. But after doing that for a while, I was sort of like, well, I would really enjoy maybe getting to know the spiritual side of, paganism and witchcraft. And the more I explored in traditional paths, the less comfortable I felt, because I was not, I'm not the kind of person who wants to be kind of shoehorned into heterocentric worship structures. Not that those are not valid and that they're good for people who are, heterosexual, but I don't look at the goddess as a lover. I've never been able to relate to the idea of a goddess as a lover, because I'm super gay. who's ever met me would know this. I open my mouth and a purse falls out. So, exploring other kinds of spirituality, I started looking into things like Chris Penzack's Gay Witchcraft. I picked up and thoroughly enjoyed Michael Thomas Ford's Path of the Green Man. There's another book by an author whose name escapes me, but it's called Earth God Rising. And these sort of led me to start exploring the spiritual side of paganism as a male who is attracted to other males. And I would say I almost found the Unnamed Path accidentally. I got introduced to a group of men in Houston who were interested in starting a gay male pagan study group to, sit around and talk about magic and how they relate to the spiritual world and all that kind of stuff. And then I found out that, we've been listening to this podcast and it's called The Unnamed Path and you should really listen to it because, it sounds like maybe something that you'd get a lot out of. And as I've said elsewhere, the rest is kind of history. Hyperion started offering distance classes, and a couple of other people there in Houston were like, yes, please, I will take a distance class. Yes, please. Because flying to California is a little outside of what I'm capable of doing right now. So, yeah, I want to do distance learning, and that was amazing.
Mm-hmm. In your bio that you gave me, you said you were a student of Anderson Ferry. How is that tradition different from the Unnamed Path? Do you ever feel like they conflict?
I would not say that I ever feel like they conflict. I am studying Anderson Ferry under Storm Fairy Wolf, who has the Blue Rose fairy line, which has also been very educational for me. I would say that they inform, the two paths inform different areas of my life, where the Unnamed Path has taught me more about how to be a spiritual leader. Without being like a street preacher or, you know, a proselytizer, how to like actually engage with people in my community and be that kind of a leader, as opposed to trying to bring people to the flock. And has taught me, you know, of course, how to get in touch with parts of myself, like the shadow self, or how to start developing relationships with gods and with, you know, spiritual allies. In a certain sense, the Unnamed Path has been a lot of outer work for me, and Fairy has been very heavily inner work focused. So for me, it's less about the two paths kind of conflicting and more about they just kind of handle different areas. There are definitely some parallels between the two, but there are also a lot of big differences as well.
Can you describe some of the differences?
Well, let's see. Fairy has more gods, for one thing. In the Unnamed Path, there are just four. And we develop specific relationships with them. There are quite a bit more than four in the fairy pantheon. I believe it's Victor Anderson who said that all gods are fairy gods. So take that for how you will. Let's see. In some respects, it's almost hard to describe how they're different because it's kind of one of those things you have to experience. They're both, at their core, more of an ecstatic, experiential kind of tradition, rather than, you know, an intellectual sit on the couch and, you know, think about pagan spirituality kind of tradition.
Awesome. Now you mentioned you know, the Unnamed Path. For those who don't know, you know, we do have four gods, two gods and two goddesses. Which of the gods or goddesses do you work with?
So, I work with all four of them, because that's just sort of the nature of my personal work. I work more frequently and more specifically with the light and dark gods. In our tradition, we are initiated under one of these gods, and I am initiated under the light god.
Could you... I'm trying to think if this is right. Could you describe a little bit how your relationship with the light god works?
I can try. For me, it's kind of about the way that the light god works, in the most general and generic terms that I can, you know, talk about openly. Is he works in a very cerebral and very kind of logical place of the mind. And so that informs a lot of the ways that I view the world. So I tend toward coming at the world from a place of the mind. from being very, you know, intellectual or cerebral about things. However, there is also one of the parts of the Like God is a yearning towards experience. And that also informs, like, the way I operate in the world. You know, he is, each of our gods is, I don't want to say over because that makes it sound like they're only one. All four of our gods take each of the four paths as their own, but they all approach each of the four paths in our path in their own way. So, you know, the Light God's perspective on shamanism is going to inform how I approach shamanism sometimes. Same thing with energy healing and with death walking. He is considered to be over magic and prophecy. So, you know, which perhaps unironically is the area that I have the most experience in. So that for me is more of a strong suit in terms of magic and prophecy. Let me see. Is there any other way I could describe that? I don't know. I think each of our relationships to our gods are very unique to us. I know that the way that I approach my dealings with the Light God is different than some of our other initiates who are under the Light God. Same thing with, you know, we call them their kids. So same thing with Light Goddess kids. And, you know, I know that one of our brothers, his approach to her is vastly different than another. So sometimes it may be even easier to talk to one of them about how they approach their gods when you want to know some information.
Mm-hmm.
If that helps, or if that answers the question.
I think it does. Now, you did say that you have quite a bit of experience with magic and prophecy. Would you say that's your flavor of magic? That's very much what you kind of specialize in?
Actually, technically, no. That's just what I've had the most experience. That's what I've had the most experience practicing in my life before I started studying the Unnamed Path. Actually have been delving more deeply into how shamanism works and, like, what that means for me and my practice. So technically I would say that while that is the area I am specializing in terms of shamanism, I'm not an expert in it.
Understandable. Yeah. How would you say that the teachings of the Unnamed Path have affected your personal spiritual path and your magical workings?
Oh, gosh. That's quite a long conversation to have. I mean, there are a lot of different aspects to the teachings that we have and that we, you know, that you go through in the apprenticeship that are different even than the podcasts. You know, the podcasts are publicly available information. So in some respects, it's kind of generalized, whereas the apprenticeship goes deeper into things and introduces things that are obviously not public information. I would say that the biggest parts of the Unnamed Path to affect my spiritual life, my personal work, really was giving me the confidence to be able to do things like this, actually. Before, I would never have in a million years considered being on anybody's podcast, and I think this is number 3 or 4 that I've come on now. You know, I answer questions in public about people, wanting to know more. Or, you know, I did our practice of raising the Great Crossroads for our brother's wedding. So being able to be a public face in paganism as a representative of our tradition is something that this definitely brought to me, whereas before I would never have considered that. It has given me a lot of tools and a lot of allies to work various activities. You know, I do more work magically by dealing with spirit allies now than what I used to. I frequently would approach magic almost like, well, from a very ceremonial type of perspective, not necessarily the like conjuring of spirits, but more the add this list of ingredients, stir them in just this way, and poof, magic. Whereas my practice now has gotten a lot more organic in terms of how I do things. Frequently, I will talk to one of my spirit allies and be like, is this a thing that I should be doing? As opposed to, you know, just barreling ahead. Maybe it's something that I would like for them to go do for me. So, you know, I'm going to offer a specific reward or payment to this spirit to go and do a thing for me. I would say it's also definitely informed the way I do practice things like ceremonial magic, because it's given me a much less adversarial viewpoint on the spirit world. When you're working in a tradition that places you in nature, when you do magic, you know, when we raise space, when we raise the Great Crossroads and create our sacred space, we're not cutting ourselves off from the rest of the world. You know, we're not drawing a circle. We're not, you know, delineating between inside and outside. You're not introducing a duality between inside and outside, you know, sacred and profane. You're acknowledging that all of nature is, in fact, sacred. You're just bringing the attention of all of these, you know, all of our gods, first of all, and also all of the ancestors that we have. You're bringing their attention to you and the work that you're doing. So, when practicing things like ceremonial magic, there's a lot less of the I'm going to enslave this spirit to go do X, Y, and Z for me. It's more like, hey, I need X, Y, and Z done. That's your area of expertise. Are you willing to go do that for, you know, A, B, C price? If you're not, cool, I'll go down the road to somebody else. and I have noticed that, you know, I get different results because I don't have to worry about, you know, the old, what's the old proverb about not wishing, about wishing things from like a genie, you know, the man wishes that his family never starves, so the genie kills his whole family. Because it's an enslaved spirit. So it's going to take the words that you give and interpret it how it wants, as opposed to something that you have an alliance with that's going to do the thing for you how you want it done because it's getting paid.
That's awesome.
As I have rambled on.
No, that's a lot of great information that I don't think we've covered yet that I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to be very interested in.
Well, I mean, and in terms of doing things like, you know, the shamanic focus of, like, working with spirits, one of the things mm-hmm. that particularly for me has been very useful in specific circumstances, but also very eye-opening. You know, in a lot of the neo-pagan and, you know, new age kind of communities, there is a huge, huge bias against things like pharmaceuticals or man-made mm-hmm. objects.
Yeah.
You know, because they're man-made and they're not natural, and only natural things are good because there's still this enforced duality between natural and unnatural. You know, that only natural things are good and anything that is unnatural is bad. Well, mm-hmm. the thing is that, at least this is how I see it. Obviously, other people have different opinions, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. For me, and my perspective on it, is that we are part of nature as humans. We are part of nature. Now, we are obviously one of the more destructive elements in nature, clearly. However, yeah. you know, it is possible to both be human and make things and not destroy the world, you know. But the things that we have made, you know, things like pharmaceuticals and things like, I don't know, for a long time, for example, I used a resin cast skull to function as a skull to talk to do ancestor work and to do spiritual work with, because that's what I had to work with. I was not in a position to buy an actual bone skull. I have one now, although it is not human. But, you know, at the time, that's what I had to work with. So that's what I worked with. You know, I sometimes find it interesting that people will have absolutely no qualms working with a cast iron cauldron, but will freak out about a drug. You know, like both of these things are man-made. Both of them required research into how to make this thing. What's the difference? You know, why is the cauldron considered a spiritual tool and the pill not? You know, and working things from a shamanic perspective, if divinity is inherent, if divinity is immanent, that means it's immanent in everything. There is a part of divinity that is in all things. One of the things that differentiates us as humans from animals is our ability to create. You know, we make tools, we make things, we make art. There are obviously some animals that know how to do this and that have learned, and that's what we're, you know, things change and we're learning new stuff. But when we create something, we are pouring our passion into that thing. You know, for the researcher who creates a new drug to help fight, you know, diabetes, that's a passion for them. Yes, they're, you know, the outcome of that may be being controlled somewhat by a pharmaceutical company who's looking to make money. But the person who's doing the research is pouring that passion into doing this research. So they're creating this compound. Things like Valium, for example, have their basis in valerian root. You know, you're taking a natural root, the valerian, and you're extracting from it the thing that gives you the effect so that you can either make the effect stronger or you can control the effect better, because instead of, you know, this valerian root only has 5% of that, this other root has, you know, 10 or 15% of that compound in it. So this one's going to affect somebody much stronger, whereas this pill always has the same effect. It always has the same amount of stuff in it, right? So it's a little more controllable.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like I was saying, is that, you know, if the divine is immanent in all things, it's immanent in all things. If spirit is in anything, it's in everything. So instead of railing against, for example, you know, the evils of a pharmaceutical, be a shaman, you know, be a worker of will and awaken the spirit of that drug and say, you know, this is what your purpose is. I want you to do this purpose and I want you to do nothing else. I, for example, took care of a family member last year who had broken her arm and was mm-hmm. on a lot of painkillers because it was a very, very bad break in a very bad place. So she was very concerned about potentials of addiction and other problems and side effects by these painkillers. So perhaps unbeknownst to her, but, you know, for me, I, you know, did my little thing and talked to the spirit of that pill and said, you know, this is your purpose. I am awakening you to this purpose. You are to control pain. You are to minimize discomfort. You are to cause no side effects, and you are to leave the body as soon as your work is done so that there is no lingering effect and no ill effect. You know, poof, a month later, she goes to the doctor, and the doctor tells her, wow, your arm has healed remarkably well for someone of your age. You know, she has no side effects. She has had no addiction problems. So I think that, you know, while I think that there is definitely obviously some transparency that needs to happen in terms of, you know, what our pharmaceutical companies are doing, what our, you know, agricultural businesses are doing, I think that we are missing opportunities as magical people to fully engage in all of the tools that are available to us.
Yes. When you were talking about, you know, working with spirits and stuff earlier, the first thing that popped in my head was that story about your family member that you had told me in the past. And I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to mention it or should I mention it? But definitely, you know. I was like, oh,
yeah,
yes,
I mean,
he mentioned it.
Well, I mean, you know, I think that, and that, you know, and that's one area that our, you know, I disagreed with, even with Hyperion about. You know, Hyperion was very much, you know, not about the whole pharmaceutical thing. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes they help people, you know. I know there's, you know, for example, there's a meme that goes around every now and then that has, like, a picture of a forest. And it says, this is an antidepressant. And underneath of it is a picture of a bunch of pills and blister packs that says, this is shit. The problem with that is that, first of all, most antidepressants don't come in blister packs. Second, you know, you don't know what each person is capable of doing. There are some people for whom going on a walk in nature is an immediate lifter of their spirits, you know? And that's great, and that should totally be encouraged for people that that works for. And there are other people who couldn't go walk in that forest because their depression is so bad that they can't get out of bed, or it manifests in their bodies as physical pain that prevents them from walking, you know. Not to mention you have other things like, oh, I don't know, the forest in Japan that, you know, people go walk through and commit suicide in. So, you know, maybe that nature walk is not so great for people. I mean, I'm just saying, clearly that forest is not meant for people to walk around in, especially not if you're feeling a little low. But I think, you know, that again is there's that dichotomy. And I think, and I wonder sometimes if that's left over from things like medieval Christianity or just Christianity in general, not to bash on it, but where, you know, things that are spiritual are seen as good and things that are physical are seen as bad. Which gets translated over by the, you know, the New Age community or by the, you know, the neo-pagan community as things which are natural are good and things which are, quote-unquote, unnatural are bad. And I think that just sets us up for a lot of problems.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, you know, when I first started my own, like, pagan journey, I was very much – I went that route where I was like, oh, you know – has to be natural, stuff like that, you know, staying away from, you know, pills and whatnot. But I've, like, totally done a 180 on that. I'm like, no.
I mean,
no,
I think, you know,
every,
you
I, know
think
it, it,
worked, I think a lot
whatever,
of us,
whatever,
start
yeah, whatever, we're, yeah. I mean, I got to, I was like, you know what? Sometimes that works for me. Other times, this is going to work for me. So,
I mean, how did,
it's everyone's did, thing, well, everyone's own thing.
What did Susan say the other day? If you can't make your own neurotransmitters, store bought is fine. Because you know what a lot of people don't think about in terms of like depression and mental health and I'm sorry for getting on this. It was a pertinent conversation from yesterday. What a lot of people don't realize about things like mental health and depression is that everybody, every human being is dependent on the neurotransmitters in their body, you know, serotonin and all of those. Everybody's dependent on those. It's just there are some people who don't – their body just doesn't make enough of them. And, you know, if your body isn't making enough of them, you have to get them from somewhere, you know. So otherwise, you know, bad things happen. You know, your brain goes, well, I don't have these, so I'm just going to make you sad for a long time. So, you know, you got to supplement those from somewhere. And I think people, you know, there's still these huge stigmas around mental health that make me really, really sad, actually, where, you know, first of all, we don't talk about them and because, you know, they make us uncomfortable. Well, discomfort is a source of power. So if we talk about the things that make us uncomfortable, we can, A, stop making them uncomfortable, and, B, we can reclaim the power that that discomfort has over us. But, you know, there's also this big stigma about, you know, well, why won't this thing that worked for me work for you? What's wrong with you? Why are you so much more broken? And I think that's really harmful for some people.
Yes.
Where, you know, for somebody, you know, for example, somebody who is able to control the symptoms of their depression through meditation and through, you know, going on walks, and, you know, through diet and exercise, looking at a person who isn't able to control the symptoms of their depression with that and going, well, you know, clearly you're doing it wrong because it worked for me. Besides just being shitty, that doesn't help anybody. You know, no one's saying that, you know, everybody should take pills. It's just that, you know, for the people who need them, you know, go take them.
Yeah.
At any rate, now that I've digressed enough on that.
Well, you know, let's do a little musical break, and then we'll come back and finish up, you know, some of our personal questions for Chase, and then we'll talk a little bit more about shamanism. We already talked some bit about shamanism, but we'll go back and, you know, maybe expand on some of those things that we talked about and talk about a couple other things. So we're going to play Hymn to Hearn by S.J. Tucker.
You can say your prayers, work your rites, burn your little candle day and night. You can shimmy till dawn to the pounding drums, but you best be ready when the horn one comes, yeah. Sound of a hunting horn, you dance a ring in the gathering storm. If the solstice time gets your panties in a wad, just the coming of the horn god, he will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Hey, hunter who tracks outside of time, guardian lord of ancient rhyme, brother stag in the musky glen, consort of the goddess in the woodland den. We call you forth as we make our way, walking in your power every day. Guide us through in our hunt this night, and maybe even later in the great rite, he will call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. So revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Leap to the sound of a hunting horn. If you dance, bring in the gathering storm. when the horn one comes, he's gonna call you out, make you sweat, give you a blessing that you'll never forget. Revel in the chase and let your heartbeat run. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one. Blessed are the children of the horned one.
Welcome back. You're listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. My name is Michael Graywolf. I'm your host for the day. And that was S.J. Tucker and Him to Hern. Today we've been talking with fellow brother Chase Powers. We've been, you know, talking, getting a little bit to know Chase, and we're also talking a little bit about shamanism today. Have just a couple more questions for Chase about himself and being a teacher in the Unnamed Path. Let's see, where am I on my notes? what is something you would tell prospective students who are interested in studying the path? You know, how should they get themselves ready, you know, to study?
One of the biggest things I think that we always try to tell our students is that when you come into this, when you come into doing the apprenticeships, you really, 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 really have to come at it from the, you know, empty cup, blank slate kind of approach. You know, at this point, there are very few and far between men or, you know, people in the pagan community who would ever even be interested in something like the Unnamed Path who haven't at least studied something, you know, even if it's just, you know, even if they've been completely solitary. One of the things that we've had issues with in the past is when people come to the apprenticeships and they try to bring all of their magical training and all of their previous worldviews along for the ride. You know, there are certain things that we teach, and certainly one of our gods who likes to challenge, you know, deeply held beliefs, because he likes people to have experience, not belief. You know, it's great if you believe something, but like, why? You know, why do you believe this? What is the root of this belief? Is it based in an experience, or is it based in something that someone once told you? You know, is it based in something that you studied? So, you know, we ask our students to sort of suspend. We're not saying that your magical training is worthless, or that, you know, you were wrong in the past. It's just, you know, while you're studying the Unnamed Path, study the Unnamed Path. Don't study the Unnamed Path as a, you know, British traditional witch. Don't study the Unnamed Path as a ceremonial magician, because you're not going to get the experience out of it that, you know, you will be able to appreciate, as diplomatic as I can put that one. You know, studying a magical tradition, especially one like this, because we do a lot of deep work. You know, you do have to confront some shit during the course of your apprenticeship. Having that kind of open mind is important, but also having dedication is important. You know, studying this kind of a tradition is not something that you do on a lark. This is not something that you do for fun. I'm not saying that, you know, we don't have fun, or that, you know, our tradition is so serious, because clearly it's not. Anybody who's been around us for any length of time knows that we all like to laugh and cut up, you know, because that's what we do. But, you know, when you're studying and when you're interacting with these, you know, when you're interacting with these gods and you're interacting with these spirits, you know, have some dedication to it. You know, if for example, most of us, we have, you know, we have our disclaimers and our permission slip is not the right word. What am I looking for here? Like our codes of conduct and things for starting a class. And one of those is like, you have to make this a priority. If you are constantly, you know, calling out of class or, you know, not attending class because, you know, oh, well, I had this party that I really wanted to go to. Or, you know, there's this thing that I really wanted to go do, and so I'm going to stop, you know, studying for a while. Like, that's, you're not really showing dedication. So, you know, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. So, yeah, that would be the two things I would definitely encourage people who are interested is, like, you know, be sure that you are in a place where you can dedicate time to studying, you know, where you can dedicate time to being able to do homework. You know, as you probably remember, there is homework in this class, and it's not like write a paper. It's like I've got to go do a shamanic journey every day for the next 2 weeks, you know, and for some people that might be 15 minutes, but for some people that might be 2 hours that you might be, you know, doing a shamanic journey. So you got to be able to dedicate that time or, you know, in the immortal words of South Park, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, I very much agree with what everything you just said. You know, one of the things that, you know, I did come across when I was going through the second round, you know, as a student teacher, was one of the students I was working with, he kept having issues, you know, with his other tradition that he was a part of. Like, it would, whenever he would try to focus on the learning path, his other tradition would, like, pop up, and, you know, he'd be like, oh, maybe I should look at it like this way and go completely different route.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
No, 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 no. Pull back. You have that, but you do have to kind of put it to the side. Don't forget it. It's there. You need to keep that stuff going because you don't want to, insult your guides, gods, or whoever you're working with in that tradition, but you also have this, it's separate, and you need to focus on this also. You know, you have to build two different types of relationships. It's kind of like when people think of our gods as just faces of, you know, the other gods, like people will see the dark god, you know, and be like, well, isn't that just another face for Hearn or, you know, the horned god?
Oh yeah, that would be thing number three that I would tell prospective students is our gods are not other gods. Our gods are not other gods. Like, our dark god is not Pan, our light god is not Apollo, our light goddess is not Athena, and our dark goddess is not Hecate. These are not the same gods. To use a term from Dungeons and Dragons, sometimes they share similar portfolios, like they kind of do some of similar things, but they are not the same gods. They're not. They're really, really not. And most of the time, when somebody approaches them that way, like, oh, you're just Hecate, I've worked with her before, you'll get educated on that real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick. I'm totally going to tell a story of one of our brothers. I'm not going to name his name because I don't want him to hurt me. But in terms of like what happens when you are doing two traditions simultaneously, this is not a discouragement, by the way. This is just a story of a thing that happened to someone. So when we got into our shadow work, whenever he would encounter a shadow brought up through his unnamed path work that he wasn't ready to deal with, he would go over to his fairy work. And he would, you know, be doing that. And then, you know, while he was doing that, you know, he could kind of process the other shadow. And then he would, a shadow would come up in fairy, and he'd be like, oh, I'm not ready for that. And he'd go back over to unnamed pathwork, and he'd be doing that. And he said, I went back and forth, where I would distract myself from one shadow by doing work in the other tradition. Until one day, I was trying to distract myself from a shadow in the unnamed pathwork, and I went over to fairy, and I got a shadow that came up. And they were two different shadows, and I had to deal with two different, very strong, very potent shadow issues at the same time. So, being devoted in the work that you're doing in one tradition is great. If you're going to do two traditions at the same time, be prepared that maybe stuff's going to come up. Because when you do things like that, you're announcing to the universe that, oh, hey, you can take on all this extra stuff. So the universe will give you extra stuff.
So here's a question that I asked. I totally forgot his name for a second. That I asked David, and you can answer if you want to. I have a feeling this is going to be kind of a might be a touchy question for a bunch of the brothers who are teachers now. You are one of the, I don't know where you fall in this timeline, but you were one of Hyperion's students. Mm-hmm. We are getting more and more students coming into the path who have never met Hyperion. They only know Hyperion's voice through the Unnamed Path podcast. I do get approached occasionally being like, wait, people didn't realize Hyperion had passed away. What are some things that people who have never met Hyperion, what are some things that, you would think that they should know about Hyperion?
Oh, gosh. Important things to know about Hyperion for people who've never met him. He was probably one of the most intelligent men I've ever met in my whole life. He was vastly knowledgeable about a lot of different things. And he also had the humility to be able to tell someone, I have no idea. If you asked him a question he didn't know about, he would not bullshit his way through an answer. One of the things that he said a lot and that he always tried to impress on us, as people following in his footsteps, is that he was not a guru. He was not, he was not a figure like Crowley or, who wanted to have recognition for the work that they've done. He was here to do the work, he would always tell us, please do not put me on a pedestal because I will fall off at the first available opportunity. I will fall off. And that's something that, when we become teachers that we, at least I know I do, I try to always impress on my students. I'm like, I am not a guru. I am transmitting these teachings to you. I'm giving you a map. And, a good foot in the behind to put you on the path, but, how you walk the path is up to you. So, please don't put me on some kind of pedestal about, you're so much more knowledgeable, because I'm like, no, not necessarily. I may know more about this, but, and he was always very adamant about, I am not a guru, do not make me a guru. Oh, gosh. What else about Hyperion for people that have never known him? He gave the best hugs, for sure. He was a very warm and, congenial kind of person. He never really, in my interactions with him in places like, Stone and Stang or at PantheaCon, he never met a stranger, and if ever somebody was trying to get too close or take too much, he was always very gentle about, you know, disengaging. He was also very careful not to invalidate other people's genuine experiences, even if he would call into question whether or not that was actually an experience they had or something that they made up. Because for him, it was always very important to not invalidate someone, because that frequently leads to them not wanting to grow. You know, that, mm-hmm. that more often led to hurt feelings than it did to growth. oh, gosh. He was very complicated. I can't think of... I can think of a million different things that I loved, but I can't really name them, if that makes any sense. Yeah, just, you know, he was a very great teacher, and I'm very honored to have been both his student and one of the people that he, you know, one of the first group of people that he wanted to make into teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about it all the time that, you know, I was one of the last ones, I think I was one of the first ones who was going through classes and did not get a chance to meet Hyperion. Cause
I think if not the first, you were one of the first.
Yeah. Because he passed right before my first in-person class.
Yep. Yep, he did. Oh, yeah. That was a bad year.
Yeah. But, you know, his legacy lives on through, you know, the teachers that are teaching the past and the students who are studying. And, you know, through
this is
his,
very true.
Through his work in California with his Dr. E products.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's been very educational and very heartwarming to see in the years since he passed the huge number of people who he touched, either, you know, through just a random conversation he might have had with them one day, or, you know, that they listened to him give presentations on, you know, hoodoo or any number of the other subjects that he would talk about. And just to see how many lives that he touched was very, it made it a little better, I guess.
Hmm. Hmm. Well, let's kind of, you know, change, you know, directions a little bit. You know, I did say that another part of this podcast, we are going to be talking about shamanism. Now, Chase, would you like to explain to our listeners what shamanism is and how it works in our tradition?
Oh, gosh. So, shamanism in our tradition is the activity of... Going on shamanic journeys, seeking out information and spiritual medicine to bring back to people, either for ourselves or for those in our community or people who need our help. in it, we work with spirits, spirits of the land, spirits of our ancestors. And when I say our ancestors, I mean our ancestors of blood, but also our ancestors of heart. You know, so not necessarily just the people who gave birth to us, but also, like, the people of our tribe. Specifically for us, of, you know, men who love men. it's, at least in our tradition, it's considered a more passive practice, because generally you are doing the work while your body is still, you know, your spirit is off doing the work. But this is not to mean that, like, you just sit around and don't do anything. Because clearly, if your spirits tell you that you need to get up and dance, then you need to get up and dance. Yeah, I would say that, you know, for us, really, it's about being connected. It's about being connected to the world of spirit. I like to call the brothers who were shamans, the ancestors of men who love men who were shamans, as the dancers of spirit, the ones who bring medicine and balance back to us.
Mm. Now, what would you say are some of the that you can talk about, what would you say are some of the shamanic practices that, you know, brothers of the Inland Path usually, and you mentioned a couple where you're talking about going and retrieving medicine for people, spiritual medicine for people, or, you know, working with the spirits of the land and ancestors.
There's also the practice of soul part retrieval or soul retrieval. Where, you know, a trauma has occurred and literally a fragment of the person's soul has split off from them. And this is usually done as a survival technique, basically, where, you know, your soul was like, oh my God, I'm going to die if this happens. And so part of you breaks off to, you know, save yourself. This leads to many bad things, continued traumas later on in life, you know, that seemingly have weird roots. Our brother Kai is actually probably the best one to talk about in terms of soul retrieval. That kind of is his, that's really his forte. we work closely, we work closely with our spiritual allies. And this is not necessarily just, you know, some random spirit, but with those that we have developed a close relationship with. You know, we have a number of different spirits in our personal spiritual courts. And, you know, developing a relationship with them. You know, when they want to teach us something, listening to the things that they want to teach us. But also, you know, the relationship is not, it's supposed to be a relationship. It's not one-sided, right? Like, we are not, well, we should not be the, you know, whipping boy of the spirits, at least in my opinion. You know, so there is supposed to be some reciprocity, you know, involved. This does not mean that it's going to be comfortable, because that is also not how this works. It is not comfortable and it is not easy, but, and there will be times when, you know, things will happen, you know, in shamanic journeys that really are traumatic and really suck. And there is a lesson to be learned in them. Even if that lesson is just that sometimes shit happens. let's see. What else? What other things that we haven't already talked about? I mean, my own personal practice of shamanism really is about, you know, being more connected to spirits, you know, from anywhere from things like mediumship and trance possession to, you know, doing actual shamanic journeys. It can also be, you know, going and if someone asks me a question about something that I'm like, I have no clue, but I'll go ask someone who might know, you know, going on a, you know, for lack of a better term, mini journey, to ask one of my spirit helpers to be like, hey, so here's this person's question. What do you got? I also find that it, you know, that practice informs other things where, you know, I'm also an avid reader of tarot cards. And sometimes if I'm reading for someone and I'm drawing a blank on a particular card, like, I may know what the card means, but in this particular circumstance, I'm like, I don't know how this is relevant. I will often find that my spirit helpers will pop up with, oh, hey, so this means, you know, this means X, Y, and Z. Oh, okay, great.
Hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, me and you participated in a public ritual back in Texas for seership. I was like, would that be more, you know, prophecy, or would that be more, you know, shamanism? And I was like, it could be a bit of both.
So technically, that falls under the purview of magic and prophecy. However, there is absolutely an element of shamanism to it, and that's one of the things that I think is also important to know or to realize about the Unnamed Path, is that while we do have the four paths, you know, the four parts of the Unnamed Path, you know, magic and prophecy, death walking, shamanism, and energy healing, all four of those parts are interconnected. You know, you will never have energy healing that is not influenced by the ancestors of men who love men in the Unnamed Path. You will never have death walking that is not in some way related to dealing with the spirit world. You know, magic and prophecy, same thing. Even shamanism, you know, there are aspects of magic that happen in shamanism, because when you come back with that spirit medicine and your spirit tells you, so, you know, you need to do this ritual to do, you know, to integrate this soul part, that's magic. You know, the creation and the execution of that ritual, that's magic. You know, the driving off of, you know, spirits that are not evil, but, you know, of unwanted or distracting or destructive spirits, you know, driving those off is an act of magic, but it's influenced by shamanism because you are aware that the spirits are there. Yeah. Does that answer the question more or less?
I believe so. Yes.
But yeah.
I'm going to say it.
The circle of sight that we did, that I would say that falls pretty much under magic and prophecy, but is definitely influenced by shamanism. Because while we are, you know, when people ask us questions in a circle of sight and we give them answers, we are offering them prophetic answers for their questions, but we're engaging in our shamanic relationships to get those answers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I have to say that, and that I participated in before I was officially initiated. That was an interesting experience.
That was our pushing you off into the deep end of the pool and going, all right, sink or swim.
Yeah. Yeah, that was. Yeah, thanks guys for that.
Oh, you came out of it all right.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, fun thing from that was, you know, that, I have to say, I think people were telling us afterwards that that was the most attended ritual that they'd seen in a while. Isn't that what people had
said?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had people who, so this is, it's called CMA, Council of Magical Arts in Texas. I like to say it's twice a year, 4 days of clothing optional pagan camping.
Yep.
There are people who've been going out there for, you know, 20 something years. And one of them in particular, who's been going out there since the event was created, told us specifically, they're like, you know, we don't really go to main ritual anymore because frankly, when you've seen one drawing down the moon, you've seen all drawing down the moon. And we just don't go to main ritual anymore because we've seen it all. Over the course of 20, 25 years, we've seen all of it. So we don't go. But we've never seen anybody do something like this before. So we had a lot of people show up. I don't even know how long we were there for because I was in trance for most of the experience. I do know that when it was all said and done that my fingers were, like, ice cold, and I had to pry them off of the staff I was using. But, yeah, it was, from what I understand, it was one of the most well-attended main rituals in many people's history. So, which for me was both, which for me was both terrifying and humbling.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely got you on the terrifying part. Now,
well, you know, everybody has to go see their ordeals.
Yeah, I'll do. You know, you just made me think of something. And I'm trying to remember if this was something Hyperion had said. Maybe it was. You know, for a lot of people, a lot of the brothers call themselves shamans, and for a lot of people, how am I trying to say this? Shamans usually have to go through some sort of, I don't know if trial's the right word, or the thing I'm thinking of, what Perrin had said was, we as men who love men are inherently born with a shamanic wound. Is that something that Hyperion has said in the past?
I don't know about born with, but we often experience a level of trauma and we experience a level of soul trauma because of our especially in the West, we experience a level of trauma in our souls because of our culture. And we do have it's complicated. like many things, it's complicated. I don't know that he specifically said anything about a soul wound, but I mean, we do come with a certain amount of trauma generally just because of the way our culture is around, you know, men who do not fit into the, you know, typically toxic masculine kind of stereotype. You know, we're not exactly always well received, and often are, you know, we have trauma around our families, or we have trauma around our places in society, because we don't have really, for a long time anyway, we haven't had places in society that were ours. Certainly not anything we would have chosen. Yeah. So I don't know. I'd have to find that particular quote. It sounds like something he would have said, though.
I think it was in one of the early podcasts, because, you know, it popped in my head because when right before we started doing this new podcast, I went back and started listening to a lot of the older ones that Hyperion had done, and I think it was like one of the first like two or three podcasts he had said something along those lines.
It's been a long time since I've listened to those early podcasts, although I do still go back occasionally and listen to some of them. So I'd have to go back and re-listen to all of those in order to say for sure one way or the other. But it does sound like something he would have said.
Where would you say, you know, you had mentioned shadow work earlier. Where would you say, you know, shadow work is a big part of our shamanic practice?
It is definitely a big part of our shamanic practice when you are going through the apprenticeship. And it is also something that never, ever, ever, ever ends. You will never, ever finish with shadow work. Because, yeah, that just, you know, we don't live in a bubble. And one of the things that we do when we're doing shadow work is we process old traumas. You know, we process the things that happen to us that cause us to live and act a certain way now. But we don't live in a bubble, and we will keep having trauma occur to us as we progress in life. That's just sort of the nature of living. So shadow work is not something that you ever finish. And also sometimes you get to go back and revisit old shadows because your experience is different now. You are a different person now. And so your perspective on a certain occurrence will now be different. So now you need to learn what your perspective on that occurrence is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, shadow work is definitely a heavy element of our work.
Hmm. Would you say that, you know, the point of shadow work is to build a spiritual relationship with the shadow?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that goes back to the whole building relationships with, you know, guides and spirits of the land and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely a big part of shamanism.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, the closest relationship you'll ever be able to build is one with yourself. And your shadow is part of yourself.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Well, I think we are actually, you know, getting close to calling it a day, because I know you have to get going soon.
I do.
Yes.
Although this has been fun, and I would love to do it again sometime.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, we are, me and Matthew are more than welcome to have any of the brothers come on, you know, whenever they want. I even had one of our brothers approach me just yesterday, because we're talking about shamanism today. You know, he was saying he wanted to come on when we were talking about death walking.
Mm-hmm.
So, gonna see, you know, when we can get that together, because I kind of wanted to do for our next podcast. I have to talk with Matthew, but pretty sure he'd be more than willing to go with this. Kind of a remembrance episode, because it's going to be right before Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how did I word it? It was going to be, you know, talking about working with the ancestors and a bit of a remembrance episode. And our other brother was saying, you know, that'd also be a good time to kind of talk about death walking. I was like, you know, you're probably right. So we'll have to see how it all works out for our next episode. But, you know, before we go, if people are interested in taking classes, how's the best way to get in touch with you, or even getting in touch with you about your graphic design work?
So the best place to find out about upcoming classes, whenever they're scheduled, is going to be on the Unnamed Path Facebook group. If you're not on there already, just send a request to join, and just be watching for announcements. Generally, whenever I know the date that I'm planning to start classes, I usually try to announce, you know, a month or so ahead of time, you know, for people who are interested. I have a very brief sort of questionnaire process that I go through for all of my students. And that's just to sort of give me an idea of who they are, and also, like, you know, kind of contact information kind of stuff. But that gives me a good place to start with the conversation with them. Also in terms of, like, graphic design-y type work, Facebook right now is generally the best way to contact me. I'm in the middle of trying to get a good website up and running. everything's been a little chaotic since my move, so I'm trying to get everything up and running on that. But yeah, right now Facebook is the best. Facebook is the best place to find me. And you can find me by just searching my name for Chase Powers.
Awesome. Do you have, you know, besides, you know, doing teaching at the beginning of next year sometime, do you have anything else coming up, or are you going to any festivals or anything? Are you planning on any festivals?
I'm really hoping to get to go to PantheaCon this next year. That's the big I want to go to. Since I'm on the West Coast now, I can actually, you know, go there without having to move heaven and earth to get there. So I'm really hoping to get there. I don't really have any other big festivals that are happening right now. I'm glad everybody's enjoying themselves down at Stone and Stang this weekend. But
yeah,
that's PantheaCon coming up is my big I'm ready to go to festival.
mm-hmm. Well, You know, maybe when, you know, PentheoCon gets around, because, you know, at some point, I would like to attend PentheoCon because it sounds like a blast, you know, everything in a hotel. But, you know, maybe if the Unnamed Path does something, maybe we can get, you know, several of the brothers on who are going to be there and, you know, talk about it.
Oh, I'm sure we could probably arrange something. I'm pretty sure we could probably arrange something like that. And for anybody who has never been to PentheoCon or anyone who's heard of it but doesn't know about it, you know, it is a multi-denominational pagan convention that happens in San Jose, California. It does happen in a hotel. I will say that for those who, you know, are worried about a pagan gathering that's not held, you know, outdoors in nature, I have never had a problem connecting with any of the spirits that I wish to connect to in that hotel. It's also nice to not have to worry about getting rained out or, you know, anything like that. Obviously there are certain changes that have to be made to rituals because, you know, you can't have a bonfire in the middle of a hotel room. But, you know, it's really great. And there are a lot of different perspectives that get talked about there that are very worthy. And there are a lot of great traditions that get to, you know, get showcased and get to teach people more about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a good place to go if you get the chance at least once.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think I'm gonna play a song to, you know, send us out. Thanks again, Chase, for being on the show. Love you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I miss seeing your face.
Aww. I miss your face too.
Well, this is going to be Arthur Hines' Dance in the Fire.
There is a flame within the dark that burns a thousand different times, that shines a thousand different tongues and sings a thousand different rhymes. There is a flame. There is in the fire, if the hour will fill you, let light inspire. Make praise to silence, sing of desire. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire. A fire burns about your soul. I've got a beacon in your breast. A call of siren draws your path. A fuller whisper through your quest. A fire burns. A fire burns. Stand in the moment. Dance in the fire. Let the hour fill you. Let light inspire. In bridge of silence, sing of desire. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire. You are the spark, divine in words, that plucks the very infinite strings. that makes existence here and now. And into life with magic sings, you are the spark. You are the spark. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire. Let the hour fill you, let light inspire. It breaks the silence, sing of desire. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire. Let the hour fill you, let light inspire. It breaks the silence, sing of desire. Stand in the moment, dance in the fire, dance in the fire, stand in the moment, dance in the fire.
Again, was Arthur Hines, Dance in the Fire. I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Another many, many thanks to Chase Powers for being on the show. If you have any questions, if you want to suggest maybe a topic for us, or maybe even a guest who isn't a brother who you'd like for us to bring on, please get in touch with me or Matthew by email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at walking_UP. And again, like our Facebook page, facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. If you send us a message on there, we'll get right back to you. I'm usually on Facebook all the time, unfortunately. So once again, thanks for tuning in, and hope you have a blessed day. Bye. Oh, let's see. I have my ending. Here we go.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night.